Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 921. It's a Tuesday morning. Ray Graff here. It's the Roundtable panel. Alan Shartok on the panel today. Rosemary Armeo and J.P. Miller as well. We welcome back communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois. Good morning. Nice to have you here.
Delighted to be here on this historic day.
We have just heard Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and others unveil two articles of impeachment against President Trump. One charge is abuse of power. The other is obstruction of Congress. By the way, if you want to join us with your comments, we will probably get a ton of comments today. And I really recommend you keep them short. We'll read as many as we can. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Alan Shartok, first, your thoughts, sir.
Well, I don't think we had any surprises this morning. It was very interesting to watch Nancy Pelosi standing up there with the group. Clearly, she is the person who is organizing all of this. I found it interesting that Jerry Nadler was somewhat contained in his remarks, and that they brought out Adam Schiff, who, as you know, I have great admiration for, and who obviously has done the lion's share of work, and who Pelosi has put out in front. Now, there were other things that they could have done here. They could have talked about the emoluments clause and they could have, in violation of that. They could have talked about many of the things that the president has done. But instead, they kept it narrow. I don't know if that's smart. I know one thing. Pelosi is smarter than I am, and she obviously knows what she's doing. So that's why we have two and not 20. With that said, I'll pass on to my great friend, Teresa Bourgeois, who I am sure will have something to say about this.
Well, certainly is a historic day, but as you say, no surprises. The question is, where do we go from here? And, you know, people predict that, well, you know, why do this? Because the Senate isn't going to act. But I think, as they said, you really, no one is above the law, and you cannot normalize this behavior. But the question is, what impact will this have on our elections, and is there a new normal? How do we get back to normal?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see that there are two articles, and then what is going to be the evidence that they bring to support those two articles, and then the opposition party in the Senate, which are they going to go after? I find it hard to believe that they're going to go after both. I think they're going to go after one. They're going to try to figure out which is the weaker case, go after one, and then say this whole thing is.
But the Republicans have not focused on the substance at all because they have no standing on the substance. I mean, do you think that they've really gone after the substance?
Well, I listened to a lot of the hearing yesterday.
All right.
Whatever the facts are, they are giving a full-throated defense of the president and also going on offense on the Democrats and Hunter Biden.
But it was a fog machine. I mean, it wasn't on the substance, right? I thought it was a full-throated fog machine. When you can't contest the substance of what happened, then what you do is try to create confusion and consternation and drive people away. I mean, all the bickering and yelling, I think, is a strategy to get people to tune out because it gives you a headache. So
I agree with you, but it is a full-throated fog machine.
It is, but not what you're suggesting that they're going to argue on the substance. And what I think has been really clear here is that they have not defended him on the substance, and I would argue because it's indefensible. And so they try to create confusion. And I do think yesterday was a full-throated fog machine. It was, you know, they're out-trumping Trump in terms of their and he'll go to Hershey, Pennsylvania tonight, and I think you'll see more of the same.
Rosemary?
We can denigrate it as a fog machine, and let me make clear, I'm very happy that there will be an impeachment. I would have been in support of a 20-count indictment. I love that there's a stain on his presidency, but not only is it not going to work, he will not be convicted by the Senate, but he may win re-election. The polling in the swing states, including Pennsylvania, where he's going tonight, are against impeachment. And we've had two developments recently. recently in the past in this past few days, which helped. And one was the Washington Post reporting on the Afghanistan papers, which shows that there was systematic lying and deceit of the American public about the Afghanistan war by the Bush and Obama administration, supporting the idea that, oh, all presidents lie. What's the difference? That helps Trump in an indirect way. And the other was the report, the Inspector General's report, that said the origins of the investigation on the Russian interference was just, but there were 17 major errors by the FBI, which is just like the Mueller report. Yes, it said, you know, overall there was nothing to indict him on, and he claimed clearance, but there was a lot wrong in the Mueller report, and it's exactly the same in this one. And the fog machine works. They do a better job. The Republicans do a better job than the Democrats at clearing their name.
It does work, but it's not good for a democracy, nor is whataboutism, you know?
I agree.
I think what you're just talking about, the Afghan report, the Washington Post piece is very, very important about what the Defense Department did or didn't do. And that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of issue, just like what's happening with NAFTA, just like what's happening with our budget bills, that are getting obscured. You know, we're not having fulsome public debate on the things that matter in people's lives because we're focused on this, on what Trump is doing,
like,
you know, his behavior.
You did it again, though. It's not the Defense Department. They are not the ones responsible. It was the White House. It's presidential lying. That's the issue. And it just feeds into that Republican trope that all presidents lie. What's the difference if Trump lies? That's what I'm talking about.
I don't know if that's a Republican trope, though. You could say that's a everybody trope.
It's one of the big reasons given for why Trump did so well.
Yes, but, no, he does a better job lying at than everybody else, but the other presidents have lied.
But, Alan, I mean, what I worry about is the long-term impact on our democracy. I mean, I really believe, maybe it's Pollyannish, but our democracy is at risk. I mean, you've been at this for a long time. What do you think? How does it fit?
No, I agree with that. I think that if this comes out wrong, this country as a Republican democracy is done. And I think that the protections afforded by the Constitution and so well thought out by the people who drafted the Constitution will be for naught. So I think it's terribly important that we get this right. I think that Pelosi understands that. When she looked at Trump and said, "With you, all roads lead to Putin," she knew what she was talking about. And here's a guy who uses the word traitor about other people too much. Well, when you're dealing with Putin and all roads lead to you and you say, "I love the Russians and go find me information, Russians," publicly, I think we have a very, very bad situation in this country that could lead to real disaster.
And what is the president doing today before he goes to Hershey, Pennsylvania? He's meeting in the White House with Lavrov from Russia, you know.
Yeah.
And I was interested to hear former U.S. Ambassador to Russia McFaul was commenting how unusual this is to have this series of meetings. And that the President of the United States has not met with the President of Ukraine yet in the White House, but now twice or three times. This is his second or third time he's met with Lavrov.
Let me be clear. We do not disagree. I think the democracy is in danger. I think Trump has been the instrument of this endangerment. I think he has done all the bidding of Putin. All of that is true. However, if these two articles of impeachment are the only way Democrats are combating him, they are going to fail. They will not be protecting the democracy.
Well, what are their choices?
I don't know.
I mean, you know, well, you better know because, you know, you're
talking. What do you mean?
Well,
I'm not in office. It's not up to me to know.
No, but you're commenting, and it seems to me we have to decide whether or not what the Congress is doing is their legitimate role in government, that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and devil take the hindmost. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Oh, well, if that is the question, whether they're doing what they're supposed to, yes, we all are in agreement. Conversation over. I am just despairing that what they're doing is right. It's what's set up in the Constitution. In fact, they could have gone further, as I said. A 20-count indictment in this case would have been justified based on the Mueller report and the other things we know. But I don't think it's going to work.
It's not good politically, but it is right thing constitutionally.
We have to take a quick break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org. If you'd like to share a brief thought, panel@wamc.org. KFUO.org. J.P. Miller is here, Teresa Bourgeois, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. It's the roundtable panel. We're going straight to 11 today, so hang in there. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Tuesday morning, 9:34, Ray Graff with you. It's the Roundtable panel. By the way, we're hearing Big Bad Voodoo Daddy this morning. Their wild and swinging holiday party at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall is Thursday. TroyMusicHall.org if you want to find out more. This is the Roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo is here, Teresa Bourgeois, J.P. Miller, Alan Shartok, and you, of course, at panel at WAMC.org. If you're just tuning in, House Democrats unveiled two articles of impeachment against President Trump this morning, 77 days after they launched a formal inquiry into his freezing of assistance to Ukraine and requests to investigate a political rival. The articles charge abuse of power by Trump in the Ukraine affair and obstruction of Congress, only the fourth time in U.S. history that articles of impeachment have been introduced against a president. Jerry Nadler said Trump, that's Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler, said Trump consistently puts himself above the country, and the president's actions in the Ukraine affair left the House with no choice but to resort to the remedy of impeachment.
Well, as I said before, I find it very interesting that Nadler, who I knew fairly well from his days on the west side of Manhattan, is under, I think, some real constraint by the speaker, who has laid hands on Adam Schiff as the right person to be handling all of this, who I think has done a remarkable job. But in any case, they have come up with these two articles of impeachment. There is an absolute assumption that it will not work, that there won't be a conviction by the senators. But I think it may lead, and I'm interested in what my fellow panelists think, to a flip in the Senate. I think there are some people like the suburban housewives, which we know have deviated from the other Republicans and don't like what they see with Trump, who, you know, has offended them in many, many different ways other than the stuff that's up for impeachment, you know, grabbing them by the genitalia, doing all this kind of thing. I think it's all led to a lot of people thinking this guy is not fit to be president. So if you're a Republican senator and you vote to acquit, you may think it's going to help you with all of those people who are diehard Republicans, but there are people in the middle, and there are a lot of Democrats, and to shift an election, you need 5%, maybe 3%, and that could be the end of the Senate in Republican hands.
I mean, I'm not sure that this helps Democrats politically, but it is the right thing to do constitutionally. You know, we'll see in the end. But I wonder, listeners, how do you talk to your children about this? You know, how do you explain for those people who think, oh, this is just politics and Trump should, you know, you're just picking on Trump. How do you explain that when you do something wrong, you know, you shouldn't be held accountable for it?
I agree with you, Teresa, that the House had no other choice. They have an oversight role on the executive. This was clearly a corrupt act. It was ill-conceived, ill-executed, and they had no choice but to impeach. On whether it will hurt the Senate, I do think electorally, if Trump ends up winning next year, he is going to help the Senate, because Trump is a Republican turnout machine, much like Barack Obama was a Democratic turnout machine. And that helps. And you see Republicans do poorly in these off-year elections without him being on the ticket. Once he's on the ticket, he helps turnout in a big way, I think, at least with Republican voters.
How many, and I have no idea the answer to this question, but how many seats are really up for grabs in the Senate next time around? Do we have any idea, any sense of how many could flip either way?
Well, it's enough to flip the Senate, that I know. There are enough contested Senate seats that the Senate could flip. The Republicans are in much worse shape this time than they were the last time, 2 years ago, because there were many more weak Democratic seats that had to be defended. This time, it's on the Republicans.
And also, most of the Republican senators, the lion's share of them, I would say almost all of them, are much more concerned about a primary challenge from the right if they violate Trump than a general election.
In this cycle, the Republicans are defending 23 seats and the Democrats 12. Now, that doesn't mean they're contested, but they're far more Republicans.
Right, you are, Teresa. And one of the important things to remember here is which of those 23 seats are vulnerable.
Right.
And there are a lot of them. So, for example, you go to Maine, and you see Collins, and you say, she has always tried to walk that fine line and turned out to vote with the Republicans, but she may be under intense pressure. She's just one example.
Yeah, Democrats need to pick up 4 seats if they want to flip, but I don't know.
Teresa brought up a great point in the break, and that is, in her opinion, it's just possible that McConnell would like to stretch this if things are swinging the Republicans' way in those battleground states, that it may be to Republican advantage to let that trial go on and on.
Right. I think that they're going to be polling every day to see how public is reacting, because I think so far, if the conversation is about Trump and his troubles, the Republicans seem to be oddly doing well. If it's on the issues, they don't do as well. When it was on health care, you saw what happened in the midterms. It didn't go well for them. And so Trump's term has been all about Trump. Right? It hasn't been about the issues that matter to the American people. It's been all about Trump. When they get to the issues, they really have trouble. They have trouble on immigration. They have trouble on the wall. They have trouble on health care. They have trouble on education. They have trouble on climate.
Well, they don't have trouble in large sections of the middle America on immigration or things like that.
I'll go pouring the cold water on it.
But they can't solve the issue.
But the Democrats are not offering any hope. Okay, right now the economy is going bonkers. It's so good. We saw the jobs report last week. That helps Trump.
The market is going bonkers. The market is not the economy.
Jobs.
He's got support still from farmers, coal miners, all the people who should not
farmers
be supporting
Farmers are in record
to.
Amount of debt. High suicide,
they are, but they're still
and income
supporting.
Inequality is rising.
Show me the Democrat they're supporting, Teresa. They're still sticking with them, saying we're going to stay with them for
I'm
the long run.
I'm supporting Bloomberg.
I know. I'm and Bloomberg, I can see him, even though the billion. Here's what's happening, in my view. The economy is going great, and immigration still, the vast majority of the Republicans still are with Trump on that and think that Democrats are very weak on it. And yes, he's really, really weak on health care, but the Democrats have just been having these ridiculous debates about Medicare for all, forcing people to give up their policy. They have not helped themselves, at least so far. I hope it'll change, but they have not. So I don't see people switching over. If I were a Republican in the Senate, I don't see any reason to begin switching my vote away from Trump.
I agree with you that I would switch away just because of his behavior, but I agree with you.
The
Democrats are not doing well. At the presidential discussion among the Democrats on health care is troublesome at best.
Yes.
Because instead of, the Trump-Pence administration, Pence at the lead on this, has really done serious damage to our healthcare system in so many different ways. And the Democrats are debating among themselves as opposed to debating against what the Trump administration is doing on healthcare. And that's so silly, because you saw clearly how well they did in the last election when they stayed focused on healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And so I agree with you.
Now, you say, Republicans don't run on or don't do well on issues. You've said that in the past, Teresa.
I'm saying with Trump, because Trump doesn't understand how to govern and he doesn't.
However, there is a perception among parts of the nation that the Democrats have done nothing but of substance except work toward impeachment for a long period of time.
Thank you, Kellyanne Conway. Talking point.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
True. I mean, this is
true.
A lot. No. I'm not saying the
true
fact
that
is
it's
true.
It's a talking point, but it's nowhere.
I'm
close
saying that
to
people believe. Some people, a good portion of the country, believes that. That's what I'm saying.
Senator, you say, Teresa.
I'm sorry.
And you say
Senator McConnell has done with Democratic legislation in the past in the House what he did with Merrick Garland. Sit on it. Don't let it move. His goal is to hold the ball, just like he did with Merrick Garland. He's holding the ball on 300 plus pieces of legislation, including bipartisan legislation.
Facts are facts. Perception, another thing. How do Democrats change that perception?
Well, Nancy Pelosi's trying hard. She brings it up all the time, except that this only appeals to people who are listening to news, and I think a lot of people tuned out. It was hard to watch what was going on yesterday. It was very, very difficult. It felt like a rerun, first of all. We've heard
most of the
arguments.
Especially when the Republicans were talking.
Oh, yeah. I know. They were just so rude and obnoxious. Yeah, it is intentional.
I also think that's why Pelosi shut down the Nadler hearings. Nadler was at a huge disadvantage because Schiff had all the good witnesses, all the fact witnesses, and then Nadler his hearings are forced to be just basically rehashes. He brings the college professors in for a day of hearings, and then the staff lawyers. That Nadler, I think, was dealt a tough hand. Schiff had all the good witnesses. I also wonder, for the Senate trial, how much control does Chief Justice the Chief Justice have,
Russ
Roberts, versus how much control does Mitch McConnell and the Republicans have?
The
can the Republicans basically, like Ray mentioned, potentially run out the clock and continue to bring up Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, all these people,
Adam Schiff,
and or is Roberts going to be there saying, no, we're not bringing that person up, we're controlling time?
Let's remember how this works. Just so that everybody gets it straight, the House brings the impeachment charges to the Senate. They have what is equivalent, although it's not legal, it's not a law, to a they have the right person to Schiff or his people to bring the case. They are bringing the case. So the Republicans will have to defend against what the Democrats are bringing them, right? Isn't that so?
The Republican members of Congress will have to defend to the senators?
No, the senators.
The
who
senators
are there.
Will.
They have no choice except to answer the charges that are being brought by
they're
the prosecutor.
They're like the jury.
That's right.
But I think that JP is
go ahead. Then we'll take a break. Go ahead.
A different question, and I've been really curious about this myself. I think this is the question is, what is the role of the Chief Justice? He presides. The Chief Justice presides over the impeachment in the Senate, and so is McConnell in control of the agenda, or is the Chief Justice? And this is something I don't know the answer to that I've been
Democrats
trying to figure out.
No, the Democrats are in control of the agenda because the Democrats are bringing the charges. And let me just say, of course, McConnell and the President and everybody has wanted to string this out as long as they possibly could and bring it as close to the election. But I don't think it's going to be all that easy for them to do.
But you know, Alan, how these hearings go is that the majority in that House controls the time. And when you control the time, you have a good bit of power of controlling the narrative and the agenda and what's going to happen.
They control more than the time, JP. They also set up the rules. Presiding means you make sure the rules are obeyed. But those rules are made by McConnell and his people.
All right,
have huge power.
We have to take a quick break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org, an ever-growing stack of mail coming in, and we'll get to it in a moment. Welcome back to the Roundtable, Tuesday morning impeachment edition with Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, J.P. Miller, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And Alan, we got a stack.
Okay, we start with something from Robert in Scotia, who says, gerrymandering, gerrymandering, gerrymandering. Jim Jordan is one of the most gerrymandered congressional districts in the country. Gerrymander reform is how we get back to more normal. Ain't going to happen. The Supreme Court has said we're not going to touch it. And it's going to be up to state legislatures to decide whether or not they will reform the gerrymander process.
I mean, 90% of those members of Congress are gerrymandered. Am I right? They're all in safe seats.
Well, that's why Democrats need to win governor's seats. Mm-hmm.
Which is happening in New York, by the way. Now that the Senate is, not to bore you, but now that the Senate is Democratic as opposed to Republican, you got a Democratic governor, two Democratic houses, and let me tell you, they'll be changing the allocation of districts in their own image.
And the Republicans started on this project in the 80s.
And the Democrats failed to.
Right.
I mean, let us not.
Yeah, this is not.
I don't
like
want to blame. That's ridiculous.
No, you're right.
But Pelosi and Obama are responsible for a whole lot of this because they decided to concentrate on the presidential level where Democrats were being successful, and the Republicans played a long game.
I think this started in the 80s.
Tara says, "Thank you, Rosemary, for saying what I feel. I also despair that this impeachment won't pass in the Senate, that Trump will be viewed as exonerated, in quotes, and will win a second term. I'm trying to see another path forward, but I can't. I truly feel that there is no resort but to pray for our country, and then there's a down face right next to it.
Well, there's another thing you can do, which is vote. I mean, ultimately, the voters are going to decide this issue. It will ultimately be decided at the ballot box.
I'm sorry, Rosemary, just one thing. Let's remember that half the country not only thinks there should be an impeachment, but thinks he should be removed. That's a huge number of people who are in a position to make choices, not only at the presidential level, but at the senatorial level.
I'm getting this a lot because I am despairing, but that does not mean do nothing, like give in. Despair means, okay, it's really desperate. We have to take action. Voting is the least of what we should be doing. That you should do even if things were great. You should be donating. You should be canvassing. You should be picking a topic and working for it. You should be taking the long view and say, okay, we're not going to succeed in the next possibly 4 years. That's what it's looking like. But over the next 8 years, we can. You can work for candidates who will change things. And that's what's need it right now. It's more work, not less, because the situation is so bad.
And also candidates at the state level, a lot of the policy change, because it's not happening at the federal level, needs to happen at the state level.
Okay. And David says, Trump, democracy, honesty. Trump is a threat to democracy, but he is standing on the shoulders of the GOP. He is also enabled by a national media that covers the, quote, game of politics and how things will play rather than reality. How many television reports through 2015 and 16 and even still are filled with stifled laughter that you won't believe this type of comic attitude? For 8 years of Obama, they covered Republican talking points as legitimate. All the Republicans had to do was to say them, and they were presented as the other side and necessarily legitimate. I don't know if it's laziness or these huge media companies have other biases at play, but there is a way of talking about Trump that communicates the seriousness and gravity of the situation, and rarely do I see or hear it. I suppose you don't hear it here?
This is really nuts. Blah, blah, blah. The press covers everything. They cover the game of the politics, and they cover the meat of it. Almost all the things that have come out about what happened in Ukraine came from investigative reporting. The Afghanistan papers came from reporting. So you can bash the press, but you also better be praising it, too, because it does both jobs.
I think the press is struggling to figure out how to cover somebody
Trump.
They struggled and did not do well in the election. They're trying now. But how do you cover somebody who's a serial liar.
Not just that he lies a lot, Teresa, but that he's bold and shameless about it and makes no apology ever. You can't shame him into, oh, look, we caught you red-handed. You cheated in your college. You cheated in your charity. He goes, just moves on as if it never happened.
But
how do you cover that?
There was this headline I saw yesterday after the IG report came out, the Inspector General report came out, and it showed that the FBI had done some things wrong, but it showed that they didn't. There was no effort to do all the things that the Trump administration said they were doing, overthrowing the government said.
We'll definitely get into that in detail in the next hour.
So the media has a headline, Trump report shows, quote, attempted overthrow of government. Now, in the subhead, it says, but that wasn't true. But if you're skimming the headlines,
But that's it. If you skim the headlines, you're not going to know crap. That's why millennials don't know what's going on, because they look at their cell phones at headlines, Teresa. That's nuts. And journalists themselves don't know quite what to do with this. They do not want to cover the FBI report, the Inspector General's report, as the Mueller report was covered. That was not an exoneration. But if you read the headline, that's what Trump made it. So in the same way, this was not this did not clear the FBI. It's their most important case possibly in history, and they made 17 major errors. That's not clearing the FBI. So should your headline say, as Trump would have said, the origins were completely pure? No. No.
Okay, here we go. Back to Rachel. Good morning, panel.
Good morning, Rachel.
I honestly did not listen to much of the hearing yesterday. One part I did hear was a Republican quote, a procedure or part of an article that stated the minority has the right to hold hearings. Several different Republicans have made much noise about this. My question is, why might this request for a minority-led hearing not be granted? Personally, listening to the Republicans speak makes my blood boil 90% of the time. But if there's a rule, shouldn't it be allowed? There is no such rule.
That was an interesting point, though. Jerry Nadler did say, well, I'm considering it.
Yeah.
And
That's why I think the theater of the Republicans is so powerful. When I listened to the three lawyers, I kept saying, yeah, why are we going so fast?
And the moment that Jerry Nadler said, I'm considering it, is when Pelosi told her staff, get the hook, we're done, we're going out tomorrow morning.
Well, let me ask you this, guys. Do you think that if the shoe were on the other foot, and it has been on the other foot, that the Republicans would be granting these dramatic rights to
not
the
in
Democrats?
A million years.
Nope. But the Democrats failed, as they did with Merrick Garland, to show why it was so wrong.
Yeah.
The Republicans did that yesterday.
Leslie, it is probably already too late. A dear panel, for 3 years we've been laboring under the naive assumption that our institutions would save us. That was a huge mistake. The GOP has convinced half of the electorate that all government is ineffective and corrupt. They've done such an effective job that now 46% of the military believes that Russia is our ally. We do not have the mechanisms to combat the disinformation campaign. The focus is on Trump's corruption when it is the, in quote, in capital letters, entire GOP is blatantly corrupt.
Well, I will say that our institutions, public servants have really been stepping up. And I think that, you know, Time magazine has a person of the year, and I think the person of the year this year should be public servants. And
the deep state.
But I think in many different ways they have been stepping mm-hmm. up. They've been keeping things going while this administration is not paying attention to policy, and then they've been stepping up when it's not in their career interest to do so.
I should note that Nancy Pelosi and Richie Neal are expected to speak on the USMCA trade agreement at some point in the next several minutes. We're watching that. The reason it's interesting in its own right, but they may answer questions about the announcement we just heard. So we will probably try to take that. What we will do is read a few more letters, take it up to news. We'll do our local newscast. If it happens, we'll jump right to the press conference.
Okay? Good idea.
All right.
Okay, and we heard from Bill, who says, Rosemary's right again. Good morning, panel. Again, Rosemary's right. There should be a much longer list of articles. Well, wait. I mean, it's not only Rosemary. I think I started that out. Teresa said.
it was your idea.
Yeah. Okay.
All my good ideas are Alan's.
Yeah. Yes, and that's so long list. Had the Mayans angle been pursued and proved, the American public would be much angrier at the president. What about suborning perjury? Obvious and in the open. Same for campaign finance law violations. So just pursuing impeachment on the basis of just two articles seems a little wimpy. IMHO. What's that mean?
In my humble opinion.
Well, but I think
just don't do that.
Emoluments is working its way through the courts. So emoluments is being dealt with through the courts in a pretty effective way.
Yeah. I agree with you.
I couldn't remember what the other thing
is. I'm being told we will have live coverage at 10, which means we will be out of here by 59:30 for a few moments.
I love it when you talk radio.
why don't you read a couple more letters? We'll fill for another two minutes and 34 seconds.
Letters.
Dave says, it appears obvious that we should be talking about 59. How the Democrats organize a substance, in parentheses, to field a candidate to run again. Against Trump. Read your letters. Intelligent people ought to be able to field a viable alternative. The Republicans have no viable platform. Well, they have a Republican president of the United States. That's what they have. And you can say all you want that they have no viable this or that. But the fact of the matter is, in my opinion, this guy is incredibly dangerous. And they've won.
Who He's won? Not good on policy, but he has a tremendous capacity to control the news cycle.
And to inflame. Right. And to go to the dark part.
Well, and also to attract blue-collar Democrats who do believe that immigration is a problem, that do believe that China is a problem. And so his ability to attract Democrats is much more significant than the Democrats' ability to attract Republicans.
But he also has an ability to repel women, and particularly suburban women. And let's hope that the vote, you know, the hope is that they vote in record numbers.
So very quickly from Suzanne. Good morning, panel. You know what gives me hope? In the 1830s, Thomas Cole, founder of the Hudson River School of Art, wrote the following, quote, the moral principle of the nation is much lower than formerly. It is with sorrow that I anticipate the downfall of this Republican government. And yet, here we are still. 190 years later, fighting for higher moral principles in the Constitution, I admire greatly all the public servants like Dr. Hill and Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who didn't accept corruption and spoke out. May their courage inspire us to elect leaders of unimpeachable moral character. Suzanne in Catskill with Thomas Cole.
Okay. And I encourage everyone to keep their letters brief. It's panel at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois, and J.P. Miller. We will be back. We'll take a live press conference from Nancy Pelosi and Richie Neal. We'll see you on the other side.
Support for WAMC comes from...
It's a momentous day indeed. We just heard from Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richie Neal talking about new progress on the USMCA trade agreement. Earlier this morning, about an hour ago, we heard the announcement that two articles of impeachment against President Trump will be moved forward, and one is abuse of power, the other is obstruction of Congress. You're in the middle of the roundtable panel, and our panel today, The Empire Reports, J.P. Miller, communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, and WAMC's Alan Shartok. And when we last left you, we had a rather large stack of email. So why don't we just get back to that?
Your email.
Right. Well, we'll turn your mic on, and then it'll be even better.
Oh,
there
really?
We go.
Oh,
yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. That's because we have a crack engineering staff, and they did it. Okay. So Debbie and
They did crack? What are you trying to say?
Well, I used to say cracked. But now I just say crack.
Okay. All
but
right.
I love them, and they do a great job.
Well, he's a big man, and he's liable to hit you.
He's twice as big as I am.
He's not even smiling. He's gonna punch you.
Big Mike.
And the letter says.
Oh, thank you, Teresa. And the letter says, Debbie from Lenox, everyone talks about impeachment being a, quote, a political process, including Mara Liasson, the political reporter on NPR this morning. I'd like to be able to think of it as a constitutional process in a political environment. And she says, any comments? I think we've discussed that. Anybody else? No. Okay. And Bill in Cornwall says, it's a great day in America. Unfortunately, to make it stick to the greasy eel, we are going to need Justice Roberts to be a fine, upstanding citizen, hoping somebody comes forward and spills the beans on old, Trumpy, crooked, and stupid criminals should not be president. Bill in Cornwall.
That's Cornwall, Connecticut? Alan?
I believe so.
That's
yeah.
cool.
I believe
nice
so.
Nice place. All right. Sorry to...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a great day in America.
Been there many times.
No, it's
I think
sad
it's.
Day.
I think it's a sad day for our country. I mean, it's important, but I think that I'm with Nancy Pelosi on this. This is, you know, nobody wants to have this happen to our democracy.
Well,
I understand.
Well,
I take
well,
the point, but
well,
still,
what does she say in her private confines as opposed to what she says, you know, to the American people? It's a sad day. That's the right thing to say, isn't it?
I think she actually believes that, as do I. I think this is deeply troubling for our democracy.
Me too.
I think it's much, you know, I'd rather be arguing over policy than the cornerstones of our democracy and our Constitution.
Mark says, checks and balances. Are President Trump's unwillingness to cooperate not a check on a Democratic majority Congress trying to impeach him with no substantive facts? Also, Democrats weren't too concerned when Obama let Russia take Crimea.
No substantive facts?
JP, the facts yes. are...
What are the facts? You tell me.
The facts that they're impeaching on?
Yeah. I mean, I think that he made an unforced error. He made a stupid mistake. He deserves to be impeached. It's his own. It's on him. It's his own fault. I think that the facts back up the Democrats on this one.
Okay, but I
his
think it's more than an unforced...
His letter backed it up. His
own notes.
Partial transcript backed yeah. up. That's a fact.
Impeachment, says Bob from Albany. I'm torn between pride in our Democratic representatives and profound sadness that my country is being torn apart by our feckless president and his enabling henchmen. It is also agonizing to know that while this exercise is taking place, Trump's Environmental Depredation yes. Agency and his department store of the interior are selling off and poisoning our public lands and water. And that's Bob from Albany.
I agree with you, Bob.
I agree.
This is, I mean, the,
sad.
So much is happening under the radar screen that.
And we heard from Kevin on the question of impeachment. It's a sad day for the United States. The Democrats have no choice but to impeach, and as not bringing articles would be putting party over country. The Republicans are doing that, and history will show that clearly. That's from Kevin. I think Kevin's right.
But I also think that Speaker Pelosi is demonstrating right now with this press conference and the announcement of the USMCA agreement that you can legislate at the same time as you uphold the cornerstones of our Constitution, that you can do both things at once. And given the smile on their face, my guess is the Democrats cut a pretty good deal. I haven't seen the details yet, but I bet they cut a pretty good deal.
Your
on
theory
this
is
USMCA.
That she wouldn't be up there
now,
touting it.
How do you define a pretty good deal?
For the Democrats, I mean, they were in labor protections that they wanted in this for a while. There's issues over pharmaceuticals. I don't know the details, but certainly on the environment. So there have been a whole series of issues that Democrats have been holding firm on and that the Republicans haven't been willing to give on, which is why they couldn't get an agreement. I don't know the details of what they worked out, but I think that the Trump needed an agreement more than the Democrats. And so if they reached an agreement today and you've got the Democrats all smiles there, I'm guessing that once we do see the details, it's going to be to the benefit that the Democrats won a majority of the issues.
Or they could be spinning.
That's happened.
Well, and the point there is that the Democrats, like the Republicans, poll all the time.
Right.
And if, you know, Trump was winning on this point, they may have given in and said, okay, we'll make a deal.
I don't think the Democrats didn't need this one to go now as much as Trump did.
My point for weeks now have been that the Democrats are not doing a good job on theater and messaging. So if they, I think that what you suggest, JP, is beyond their ken. They're not spinning.
Well, I think that the union leaders are there. So the union leaders wouldn't be there saying this is okay if they hadn't gotten what they wanted. I think that's to me the signal that they broke the logjam that's been in place for a couple of years on this.
Yeah, that's
and
a very good
I think
point.
The Republicans caved because Trump knows he's in trouble. Mm-hmm.
Jonathan says on impeachment, we appear to be witnessing the limits of congressional oversight when the Senate will continue to shield this most corrupt president and seem poised to acquit. It is frustrating and sad to see the country so broken and divided. What can you do when one half seems utterly indifferent to facts?
Vote.
I'm going to have to move on here. And then Frank says, impeaching a president. Good morning, panel. This moment in history is an opportunity for Republicans in the Senate to take the reins and oust what has become the world's bully from the highest office in the land. They must act with binding swiftness, and perhaps they will be able to salvage their political lives come 2020. One can dream, can't he? And we heard from Roger, who said, emoluments. Like Rosemary, I'm disappointed that the impeachment charges aren't comprehensive. What did the panel think following up the Senate trial with a full emolument investigation in the House, along with constant readouts of Trump's ongoing corruption?
I think Teresa said it right, that the emoluments does not have to be handled by Congress because there are several lawsuits wending their way towards the Supreme Court, and I think it will be decided there.
Where the Trumpites who sit on the Supreme Court will vindicate the president.
They also, though, are original constructionists.
Right.
And the emoluments clause is pretty damn clear. It's going to be hard for them to argue that Trump did nothing wrong.
From your mouth to God's ear.
Yeah.
And here we go on Brenda, who says, economy? Isn't Trump's likely reelection a result of a good economy? It could be, folks. It could be.
Yep.
I think that's pretty much all you need to look at to figure out whether he's going to be reelected is the stock market up and is unemployment low. If those two things happen, he's very hard to beat.
I think the Democrats know that. And one of the things that I worry about with the Democrats is that quite frequently their commentators are saying, well, if the economy goes south, I think people don't want the other party rooting for bad news.
What Aaron, our wonderful economic panelist, said last week was interesting was that it really doesn't matter what the economy is doing right now. What counts, studies show, is the few months leading right before the election. So
totally.
It's next fall.
Totally.
And
August, September, October.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah.
Those 3 months.
But you still, I mean, the stock market is not the economy. Most Americans are not in the market. Okay, but also what hasn't happened, even though unemployment's going down, typically typically wages would rise, and that's not happening.
He spoke about that too. That they are rising, but at a de-escalating rate, so not nearly as fast.
What is rising is income inequality, and I think that was part of at the heart of what happened in the last presidential election is this income inequality, and I'm not sure that that's being solved. But I will say, as an aside, Paul Volcker, let's talk about him for a moment, passed away yesterday, one of the
great, what
a fabulous public servant he was. And I'm just a tip of the head to Paul Volcker.
Well, he kind of missed the housing crisis, though, right?
He did miss the housing crisis.
The 2008 crash that almost brought down the world economy, he kind of let that one go by.
But he also...
Other than that...
But he did... a lot of other very important things on inflation and other issues.
Matt says, Chuck Schumer's absent voice. As I referenced in September to the panel, where is Chuck Schumer? A few days ago, the panel spoke about the absence of leadership from Senator Schumer on Trump's attack on our democracy, but I believe it needs to be repeated. We need a lion in the Senate to lead the minority, but instead we have an absent voice. Well, we certainly have a subdued voice. I've been talking to the Schumer people a little bit about this, and they've been talking to me about my critical comments on Schumer's approach.
What do they say?
Well, they say he's done so many good things, which may be true. And I wrote a column in which I thought that his remarks on preserving third parties in New York State were right, but where is he on the important stuff in the Senate?
Well, what I would say in defense of, very scary for me to be defending Chuck Schumer, but I will. His goal is to win the Senate. So he has to appeal. He has to work on appealing to voters in red states that where Republicans are senators, where he wants Democrats to win. And so he wants to be careful not to become what I would call a little bit of a pariah like Nancy Pelosi, who only has to do well in certain districts. He has to appeal to win entire states.
Well, do you really think people are going to vote or not vote for the Republican candidates, for the Democratic candidates, based on what Chuck Schumer has to say?
If he's viewed as like a Nancy Pelosi, uber progressive, wealthy liberal from San Francisco, might hurt. He is much more going after, I'm a working class dude from New York City.
And as
JP.
Trump, and as
is that
Trump,
wrong?
And as Trump, yes, it's wrong.
Yes, it's
and
wrong.
As Trump is and as Trump has pointed out to us so many times, he's not going to say much because about bad things about people. No, it works in this country, and it's crazy. Chuck Schumer needs to be out there. He needs to be leading the fight. He needs to be getting the admiration of people because this election is going to be won or lost based on Trump's behavior. That's what I think.
The sort of anti-Nancy Pelosi stuff, I mean, 2 years ago.
Not
I
anti, that's how a lot of people view her. That's the caricature of her.
But look at what she's done in the last year. Look at how she's thread this amazing needle. Look at how she kept the Democrats fixated on health care, got him on it, kept him on it, got the, won in the last round of elections. And look at just today, the USMCA, how they've orchestrated this. I mean, I think she's been a legislative genius on this.
However, in the eyes of many of our countrymen, strong women, you've just defined why they dislike
her. I understand that the Republicans have spent millions of dollars trying to demonize and characterize Nancy Pelosi.
So why aren't they doing that to Chuck Schumer?
And why aren't they doing it to her anymore?
Why aren't they doing it to Chuck Schumer?
Because they don't think it's a good investment.
Because she's doing extraordinarily well.
Right. They wanted her out of here.
I think she's doing extraordinarily well. Remember all those months ago when nobody wanted to talk about her, when they were taking ads out, demonizing her? Not anymore.
Mm-hmm. Because the Republicans understood that she's an incredible vote counter and legislator, and they wanted out of there, so they went after the Democrats to force them to go after their leader.
So why doesn't Chuck Schumer try to be more like Nancy Pelosi?
That was the point in the column.
He's got a reason, and that's because he believes that his success is to try and not be as
why has he let so many judges go through?
Not to be as inflammatory, that he would win more. That's really
Thank why did he? Why has he allowed so many judges to go through?
We have to take a break here. Nancy, no, not Nancy Bourgeois. Teresa Bourgeois is here. Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, Alan Shartok.
That's my cousin.
The email address is panel@wamc.org, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Tuesday morning, 10:34 is the time. It's the Roundtable panel. Everybody okay over there?
No.
He was trying to shut me up by saying we're on the air, but we were not.
We're about to be.
Now we are. Rosemary Armeo's here. Alan Chartok. Boy, they never seat them next to each other. That's all I can tell you. J.P. Miller's here. You should have been in between them, J.P. And Teresa Bourgeois is back. Welcome back, all. The email address is panel@wamc.org.
But wait. I saw that Harvard poll showing that Hillary Clinton was the most popular Democrat.
Well, this is from the Washington Times. She's not running for president yet, but Hillary Clinton was the top choice for Democratic voters in the Harvard-Harris national poll released last week. Mrs. Clinton drew 21%, followed by Vice President Joe Biden with 20. When registered Democrats were asked whom they would support for the 2020 party presidential nod if she and former Secretary of State John Kerry were added to the mix. Third place in a hypothetical race, Bernie Sanders at 12%, followed by Elizabeth Warren at 9%. And Michael Bloomberg at 7.
So my question is, how do you spell suicide for the Democrats?
What do you mean?
Well, if she runs, the results are going to be the same. We'll have a replay, and it'll be the same.
Teresa Bourgeois is so pained right now. I wish we were on...
pain. She's happy. She's got a big smile on her face.
I am a huge Secretary Clinton fan. I think she's one of the most qualified public servants we've had, but she has made it clear she's not running, and I think this is just the Republicans trying to, you know, add a little fog to the Democratic primary process.
To which I would say, are you sure? The reason I say that is that we have, during the past several months, seen Bill Clinton giving hints that she might want to run again.
And she was on Howard Stern. I must point out that famously she avoided Howard Stern in the last election.
Right.
And he claimed, okay, this hurt you. If you had come on, it would have tipped the scales. She was on Wednesday, and he asked her many pointed questions about this, JP.
Well, Ray, when she comes on your show, then we'll know she's running.
We'll have her on a Food Friday. We'll cook up some onion rings or something. It's a great idea.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, JP.
It certainly is a Republican talking point. I do not think she is going to run. But I also agree with Ray. Why is she going on Howard Stern? And why does she... She says, I'm not running, but she kind of refuses to rule it out. So she's leaving a little window ever so...
Wait.
This is so stupid. This is so stupid.
Don't call me stupid.
The whole discussion, not you, stupid. And it is directed.
Not you, stupid. That was well played.
I don't hate you. I hate that we're talking about this.
It's the Republicans want us talking about it because it's just circular. She is not going to run again. Would she love to run again? Would she love to have a locked convention and they come and say, save us? Of course.
So the Harvard-Harris poll is a tool of the Republicans?
Is she most qualified? Yes. She is incredibly qualified.
It's silly to talk about her. It was 2016 and we've moved past it. And this just feeds the idea that Democrats can't get past losing Hillary.
Alan is raising his hand.
I'm raising my hand. Deval Patrick stayed out until right now, and he came in. I love the guy. I think he's magnificent. But he's in. Bloomberg is in. So, Rosemary, please.
Not going to happen, Alan. We have a bet on this.
How much?
What's the
$5
bet?
$5.
There's got to be.
She's not going to run.
There's got to be some odds here. Don't
Please, no
like
wagering.
100 to 1.
Well, we could talk about Bloomberg.
Yeah. Well, no,
okay.
but before we do, I
that
just want to say...
That makes more sense. He's actually running.
Hang on.
Sorry.
Let Alan speak.
No, I don't
And
want
I've
to.
Never said that phrase before, but go
Everyone
ahead.
Everyone says that to me. Don't speak.
No, not nice. Or Sarah said to Jonas when she was 2 years old, you know,
not
nice.
Nice.
You know, nice. So,
do you agree she's highly credentialed?
Oh, absolutely.
And that she'd make a terrific president?
Yes.
But that millions and millions and millions of dollars have been spent by the far right denigrating her, and she's not going to run.
I don't think she can win.
Hang on, I just want to bring on something she said about
Please. Bernie Sanders on CNN.
Please.
That he's not
weekend.
A Democrat and he's hurting the Democratic Party by...
If I didn't know better, I would say you are a little partisan. Let's just read this for a second here. Senator Bernie Sanders, this is from CNN, Annie Grayer. Senator Bernie Sanders on Sunday denied an accusation made by Hillary Clinton, and this is on the Howard Stern interview, that the Vermont senator's delayed endorsement in 2016 hurt her presidential candidacy. Oh. Here's what she said. He hurt me, there's no doubt about it, and I hope he doesn't do it again to whoever gets the nomination. Once is enough.
And she's absolutely right.
Absolutely.
He's damaging the Democrats right now on health care.
You don't think Elizabeth's thinking about Hillary, but you got to remember, Donna Brazile, who was the chairwoman of the Democratic Party, said it was fixed for Hillary from the beginning. So you could see why Bernie was a little bit tepid.
That's what Donna Brazile said.
It's not Bill O'Reilly, not Sean Hannity. That's what Donna Brazile said.
Fixed in the sense that she had far more qualifications to be president.
That she had far more support around the country.
Let her finish.
Fixed in that sense? Fixed in that she was by far the strongest candidate, that she actually was a Democrat?
That she had worked for years for the allegiance of the people on the DNC?
Fixed in the sense that they scheduled debates during Monday Night Football because they knew that she didn't do well on television.
Okay, so... That's that.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about that.
USMCA is a deal's worked out. It's an impeachment day, and we're talking about whether or not Hillary Clinton's going to
Be that could be a very important question. If your number one priority, as is mine, is getting rid of this particular president, then the fact that the water's getting muddy becomes very important. Very important.
This is why I said I don't want to talk about Hillary again until she does join the race, which is not going to happen.
I agree.
But what she is doing very effectively is going around the country, encouraging and helping women candidates to run at all levels of government. And cheers to her for that.
Okay, here we go. Chuck Schumer's absent voice. As I referenced in the September, the articles. These two are enough. They are catch-alls for his patterns of abuse. Let's see the details that fall under them. And that's from Daniel.
And now, the procedure for this is, do they have to have a full House vote to advance these?
Yes, they're trying to do that before the end of the year.
And that's a misnomer because they're supposed to go out on December 13th on the recess.
But they can't go out because they have to pass the budget bills.
Which are close to being
right.
Yeah.
Well, what they're going to do is they can't reach agreement, so it looks like they're going to do continuing resolutions, except for the defense bill. It looks like they
interesting. I did not know
they've
that.
They resolved the defense bill yesterday, I believe, but most cases they can't resolve, so they're going to do continuing resolution because they don't want to shut down the government.
Frank says GOP treason. I think with all the overwhelming evidence of how many laws and norms that Trump has broken and will do more that at this time after 3 years of the Trump crime spree, that if Republicans don't vote for impeachment, isn't this treason? Aren't they all traitors to the American Constitution? And Paul Volcker was head of the Fed from 79 to 87. He had nothing to do with the housing crisis. I think you're confusing him with Alan Greenspan.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. What he did was temporary inflation, and then there was he came back in with Obama and had the Volcker rule. dealing with the aftermath of the crash.
Yes, I'm sorry. That's absolutely true.
Thank you.
And we've also heard from David. Did I mishear Rosemary's comment about Paul Volcker missing the 2008?
I just apologized.
Okay, she already did that. Okay.
All right. Everybody's fine.
And Laurie says, our future government. Good morning, panel. Another worry looms. A constitutional convention may be out in our future. Only 4 or 5 states are now needed to get us over the hurdle of holding one. Given what Trump and the Republicans have done to our institutions and given the increased tribalism, this would be disastrous. That's from Laurie. And then we heard from John, who said, blaming Dems. It seems to me that it's always the Democratic place to do the right thing. The Dems had to pass the bills to save the financial sector and the car industry while the Republicans made political hay out of the vote. Now we have a corrupt president. It's left to the Dems to take action. Well, once again, the Republicans do what's politically good for them, but not for the country. Stop blaming the responsible people in government. John in LaGrange.
I heard an interesting stat the other day, and the Republicans complained about the bailout of the car industry, which, of course, in the end, it was costly up front, but paid itself back in the long run. But the farmers, the agribusiness farmers, have been paid out more to deal with the trade war than the car industry was paid. They've been bailed out more than the car industry was paid back. And that's not going to get paid back. Yeah. And Darryl, most of that's going to agribusiness, not family farms. Sorry, Alan.
Well, it's okay. You don't be sorry. Daryl says, why? Why was Adam Schiff not there last night? Keep up the good work. I don't know. I don't think Adam Schiff wanted to hog the spotlight. You know, one of the things that's very interesting to me about him is that he has been sending to CNN and MSNBC the other guys on the committee. He could be there for everyone, and he was in the beginning. But now all these other second-line players have been encouraged to go there, and I think he's very smart to do that.
Well, he also, I think, has a very serious prosecutorial background, and he's probably working on the actual legality of all this stuff. And he like all these politicians, likes to be on TV, but I think he's been busy putting together what exactly they were going to do and what charges they were going to bring.
It's funny, JP, you watched most of the hearings yesterday.
I listened
as well, and you know, many Republicans made a big deal. Wow, where's Schiff? We want to talk to Schiff. I didn't hear too many people saying, where's Nunes?
Yeah.
That
would have been a real...
But as far as questioning him, in other words, they didn't have to be questioned. They had counsel who could do that.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about it like it was a good thing that Adam Schiff didn't want to hog the glory and he was off working. But the Republicans made a big point of it, that he wasn't there in a nefarious way, that he knew who the whistleblower was and manipulated it. So could he have countered that in some other way?
But they did that in the same way they kept describing that lawyer as a New York City lawyer.
Yeah. And he donated to the Dems. I understand that. Whatever the situation is, they will take advantage of it. But the Republicans are good at that spin. Democrats are not.
Will voters reward that behavior or not?
Well, they did in 2016.
I don't know. I thought it was a dumb point for me. They make some points where you say, okay, they're making a point, but
then they do it again and
one.
Again and again. It's like, okay, we've heard this 3 hours ago. Well, can we move on now?
They got some orders down from the White House.
They are consistent.
They were scripted.
It is a script and it's consistent. And part of it is that this is all made up by a whistleblower who lied, and it was manipulated by Adam Schiff, who told the whistleblower where to go and how to act, and now won't reveal it. So it does hold together, and you say it's stupid, but you know, people believe in fairy tales too.
But also that people are dropping in at different times of the hearings, and so they're repeating the same things over and over.
I mean, both sides repeat. If you listen to them for 8-9 hours, you said, oh God, well, we heard this at this point. You know,
and Loretta writes to us, how the Dems can win. Esteemed panel,
talk about health care.
I think the Dems need to do a better job chest banging on how their push for a $15 hour wage has impacted people's lives and the economy, rather than giving Trump / Republicans credit for the economy. They can provide data on economies, cities, and states that have raised minimum wages and still thrived and grew. The links are there, and that's from Loretta. And that's all I've got for now.
I think if the Dems talk about how the Trump-Pence administration has denigrated, destroyed health care, that is going to be, and if they talk about climate change, because I think people care about the environment, and I think if they talk about wage inequality,
do you think, JP? What I think is they have to pick the right candidate. If it was me choosing the candidate for the Democrats to beat Donald Trump, I would pick Mike Bloomberg. If you can outspend the president 5-1, that's not a guaranteed win. But you're putting yourself in a better position to win than any of the other candidates that will have an even spending playing field. And spending money in politics is a huge indicator of who's going to win. Not definitive, but a big indicator.
But I think it's more than just money. I think, you know, Bloomberg has spent years investing and focusing on health care issues. He's spent years investing and focusing on public safety. He's 0-3 issues, the climate change. He has a whole extensive city innovations initiative. So
he has a record as mayor that he can run on.
And the global leaders know him. The business community won't be afraid of him. And he has all these different networks around the country that he's worked with directly for years that he can knit together to win.
Do you think that the American public might be, you know, a little wary of having a New York billionaire as president after the last few
against
years?
The New York. Okay, you have a choice. You can have a New York billionaire who's informed, who's respected, who has made a lot of self-made, tons of money, has given a lot of it away to a range of causes that they care about, who knows how to play on the world stage, and who has a history of attracting really good staff versus Donald Trump.
The other great thing about Bloomberg is that he is truly self-made. He came from a lower middle class background when Trump did inherit a ton of money from a very wealthy father. And if Bloomberg was willing, you know, he's not as good at the attack buzzsaw as Trump is, obviously, but if he would attack Trump on being an inherited billionaire, whereas he made his own and made more, that would be a hot attack.
And Lee Rubenstein writes a very controversial letter, says, New York lawyer, we do know that New York lawyer is code for Jew lawyer, don't we? Now that's a tough one because, you know, there are some things that don't get put out there for a lot of reasons in these elections. One of them is your religion. Another of them is whether you're gay or not. I think the press has been pretty good about all of this.
Well, one of the members of Congress called them on that, and he was called on a point of order, but he asked them to explain exactly what he meant. What exactly do you mean, counselor, when you keep...
Say New York lawyer.
One of the Democratic members of Congress in the hearing yesterday raised this issue after they said it five or six or seven times in a kind of a disparaging way, a New York lawyer. Uh-huh. You bring in this New York lawyer.
And were they Southern? So, and were they Southern sounding?
So you're saying it was an anti-Semitic attack?
I don't know if it was or not. I don't know what was in the person's mind or heart, but I do know he was called on it.
The Justice Department's internal watchdog has declared that the FBI was justified in opening its investigation into ties between Donald Trump's presidential campaign and Russia. The report was issued yesterday. It does identify serious performance failures by the Bureau's chain of command, but it rules out political bias in the decision to investigate Trump's campaign. Attorney General William Barr quickly rejected the main conclusions by his inspector general, who was in place when Barr was appointed by the Republican president. Interestingly, FBI Director Chris Wray,
W-R-A-Y,
said the problems identified in the inspector general's report are unacceptable and unrepresentative of who we are as an institution.
And they've taken steps, a lot of them, to correct those.
There were a lot of mistakes listed in there. Pfizer related, too.
Yeah, they were. And again, this was the most prominent investigation of the FBI. It is unacceptable that those mistakes were made. And so that's why I was yelling at Teresa earlier for saying the media is emphasizing that overall it was a good report for overall, it was a good report for Trump.
Hang on just a sec. I've been castigated by our engineer, and he's not in a good mood. I missed a break. We got to do an underwriting break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's Tuesday morning. 10:52 is the time. Now we hit the home stretch. This is bonus time.
Things are getting tough between Rosemary and Teresa.
Let's pick it up now. What was this argument?
Teresa, you had something to say critical of Rosemary, as I remember.
That was a hateful look at Alan for those of you in radio land.
It's just an honest disagreement about the assessment of the Inspector General's report. The Inspector General's report absolutely did include information that the FBI procedurally did some things wrong. And those things were important, but they were not relevant to the outcome. But more importantly, what Trump of the process of the investigation, more importantly, it showed that Trump, all those things that Trump claimed about the deep state were not true. That's what the report showed, were not true.
I have now read much of the Mueller report, and there is no way that is a complete exoneration. Yet Barr and Trump have plainly used...
But why play into that? It wasn't even close to an exoneration.
He's playing into it already. Have you seen his tweets since the
Wait. One at a time. Did you want to finish?
No, I'm fine. No, we're talking. This is good. Let us talk, Alan. We'll get this.
Let me ask you a question, Alan. Have you ever seen a situation where the attorney general, the inspector general, says that this wasn't right? All the things that were said about the what they had done about the deep state weren't true. And the attorney general, instead of stepping up and being on the side of his people, he then doubles down, denigrating his people, and then calls, there's now yet another, it's like the Benghazi thing. Every report exonerates, so then they start a new report. So then they start a new report, a new report, a new hearing. They have been cleared every time. They've been cleared this time.
Disgraceful. I agree with you, Teresa.
There's there's one other point that we haven't mentioned, which is that this is not the sole report being done on the origins of the investigation. And Dunham, who's the prosecutor handpicked by Barr to do that investigation, has said he does not disagree either. So you can bet that the small errors, what you would characterize as small errors pointed out, will be magnified.
Just process errors.
There are more than process errors. But anyway, the errors made will be magnified in the same way that the two FBI agents who were carrying on an email love affair became the focus of the Mueller report.
But they also showed emails that said talked about people who love Trump, right? So what we've heard publicly for the last 2 years are the emails about people who loved Hillary Clinton and hated Trump. We haven't heard until this report about their other emails of people within the
actually we did, because the idea that the press didn't cover this is bogus. That came out at the same time that the Lisa Page memos came out. This is theater. No one except us, possibly, will be reading the full reports, either Mueller or this new one.
But it does matter if the President of the United States is denigrating incorrectly the Department of Justice the FBI for his own personal political gain.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
What this report said that he did.
Well, that's right. And now
that's
true. And now back to the letters.
All right, you have 3 minutes and 22 seconds.
Laura says, spin. Rosemary, the reason the Republicans are good at spin and the Democrats aren't is because they aren't tethered to the truth of facts.
Okay. Which is exactly what we were just talking about.
It is.
Which makes it easy.
Yeah, it makes it very easy.
That's
You're
the
right.
point. Carrie says, Bloomberg. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Bloomberg won't get the minority vote because of history with stop and frisk. Discuss.
You think that the people are going to support Bloomberg over Trump, given what Trump did with the minority community around those kinds of issues? Ridiculous.
Nicholas says, Rosemary is right. Unfortunately, Rosemary has been ahead of the pack all along, and we are doomed. Impeachment is the decision, but this will only help the buffoon in the next election, and I'm not reading the rest of it because it's too long.
Okay.
Okay, and...
But I think I want to keep that.
Here, there you go.
Thank you.
What
about
stack
JP
of I,
is
stack
right?
Stack of I agree. I've never heard of JP is right, ever. But go
ahead. Hey, somebody out there write JP is
no,
right and
no,
TV
thank
is
you.
Right, too.
I don't want it.
Carol writes, JP is right. No, she doesn't. Carol writes, please comment on the Russian diplomat visiting Trump in the White House today. Uh-huh, the plot thickens. That's all I got to say. Or as Nancy Pelosi said to Trump, all roads lead to Putin. And we know that. Robert says, panel, the emoluments issue is utterly specious. Trump's hotel rooms in Washington are being made available to the general public, whether U.S. citizens or foreigners, and then on.
There's nothing in the Constitution that says it has to be a lot of payments or a profit. It just simply says you may not take payments from foreign governments.
That's what it says.
And that's what will be argued.
And Robert says, re-Bernie. It said that you're missing. It's sad that you're missing one fact. The progressive branch of the Democrats are never going to go for Bloomberg or any other corporate Democrat. Oh, really? They're going to sit home, and they're going to vote for. They'll sit home and they'll vote or not vote against Donald Trump.
Let me just say, how did that work out for them last presidential election cycle? Really? How did that work out?
How did that work out?
Here we are today.
Sitting here. Birds in the wilderness.
Like sitting ducks.
With an impeachment, with health care in shambles, with behind on climate change progress, on and on and on. How did that work out for them the last time?
The operative word is behind.
It didn't work
well. How many seconds before we have to shut up?
I don't know. We can sing a song. You want to do a little kumbaya?
Why don't we talk about Big Bird?
All right. Say goodbye to Big Bird because he's dead, and then we're going to cut the show off here in about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Carol Spinney, the Big Bird alter ego on Sesame Street, passed away, and I think we should just honor him.
And he was great. And you know what? Joe Donahue did a long interview with him, and we will actually hear some of that interview coming up in this program. So
I'll be listening to that.
You should
for
sure.
I wouldn't miss that for
I love Big Bird.
Anything.
And he was also Oscar the Grouch.
He was Oscar the Grouch, which, works for you.
What?
Didn't you like us?
There's a great Carol Spinney documentary.
See you again in
6 months.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for being here. Thanks to Teresa Bourgeois, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Amayo, Alan Shartok. Thank you all very much for listening. And, you know, there is
Thank
much
you,
more
Ray.
Ahead. Yeah.
You smiley guy.
It's so great to have you back, Teresa Bourgeois.
So great to be had.
Well, so you'll be on board with the Hillary campaign when it starts in a couple of days. All right, we got to go.